Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of those skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Hello and healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Healthy Tuesday, Carol. It's good to see you again remotely.
And, yes, it's good to see you too. You're looking well.
Well, thank you. I have moved from this place since the last time we talked. I'm not just sitting here all week waiting to have another conversation.
Come on.
life has continued to progress. And it's interesting. I don't know how you're feeling, and I'm looking forward to hearing what my listeners have to say. And I have a guest on the show today. But here's where my brain is at this moment. I'm having a really hard time feeling grounded because I'm not sure what to believe. I'm not sure if I should still feel agitated or if I should be looking forward to going bowling soon because it looks like Georgia opened their bowling alleys, or if I, you know, should be wearing a mask around my own house. You know, I feel overwhelmed by a lot of information. And a lot of information telling me trust my information. And even in some of my professional colleagues that I follow, who I've respected in the past, have come out with information kind of debunking some things that we've heard about the COVID virus. And that makes me a little anxious and uneasy. And so for probably the first time that I can remember in my adult life, I don't feel my rudder securely in the down position and that I'm navigating smoothly. And that's not a place that I normally am. I normally am going in some direction pretty confidently with a pretty secure rudder, even if at some point I realize I need to tack and go another direction. But this I'm not used to. So I'm curious about how this has been for the listeners. And I invited on the show this week my friend Dr. Michael McGee. He's a psychiatrist. He's the author of The Joy of Recovery and 101 Ways to Know If You're Addicted to Opioids. He'll tell me if I got that correct or incorrect. But he is someone who has a very calming way about him. He's very knowledgeable in the fields of psychiatry and recovery and sobriety and also doing all these this recovery work and healing from a place of love. And he was on just a couple months ago and we talked about this new book he's working on, looking at love and its place in recovery. And after the show, I got so many comments from people who said, we love Dr. McGee's voice. It's like hearing Yoda and Mr. Rogers and a really calm priest all rolled into one person. And so I called him this week and I said, hey, let's talk about how people are doing in recovery right now through the course of the virus and the shelter in place. And he was wonderful and immediately said yes, and sent me a little primer so I'd get ready for today, some things that I kind of knew but hadn't seen the statistics. And some of the stats about people and their lives is that in this time of shelter in place and uncertainty and no real forward movement yet, our society tends to double down on bad habits instead of moving forward and trying to get some benefit from this opportunity to maybe change how we were living our lives prior to the quarantine or the shelter in place. And as an example of the doubling down on bad habits, alcohol sales have risen by 55% since March. Marijuana sales are soaring. Porn consumption is way up. More food is being consumed, not just through grocery stores, but through takeout. People are getting less exercise, even though every platform is sending virtual classes to people. We're exercising less. We're streaming more Netflix. We're gaming more. And then in another disconcerting way, we're seeing signs of increases in intimate partner violence and child abuse. So we're going to talk about how we got here, how people can stay in their recovery or maintain the sobriety, and even, which may sound like a huge leap, use this opportunity, this time of stillness, to actually do some healing, which isn't something that we are capable of doing when our lives are going 1,000 miles per hour. And so those are all the things we're going to touch on. And we will open the phone lines in our kind of new virtual way. Our number that we're using for callers is 805-549-8855. And if you would like to ask a question of Dr. McGee, just call. And Marisa or Claire will take your question and send it to Carol. And Carol will send it to me and we'll get on the air. And if you're really feeling bold, and if you have your Zoom app on your device, you can call in and get the Zoom ID number and ask your question in person to Dr. McGee. And it's actually really a nice way to connect by being able to jump in on Zoom. So I am Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I am so thankful to be here every Tuesday with you. Thankful to have the support of our Central Coast Public Radio. You can participate by calling in. You can always send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. There's actually a photo of Dr. McGee and I. I should be Dr. McGee and me, like the song. Dr. McGee and me from the last time he was on the show. They're up if you'd like to check them out. And I think that's it for now. So we'll take a moment to catch our breath, listen to some music, and be back to chat with Dr. Michael McGee. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
You were the sunshine, baby, whenever you smiled. But I call you Stormy today. All of a sudden, that old rain's falling down, and my world is cloudy and gray.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. My guest today is Dr. Michael McGee. He's be considered now a regular on the show. I think this is our third or fourth time getting to chat. This is the first time we've had to do it virtually. So thank you, Dr. McGee, for agreeing to come in. Thank you for wearing a suit coat for our conversation. You look so professional, but I appreciate that. And I said at the head of the show that I am feeling a bit like I am rudderless, or that my rudder isn't setting in place very well. And you're my go-to person, I think, for talking about this feeling. And I'm curious to know, as a psychiatrist and an author and someone who's worked and lived in the field of recovery and healing for so long, how are you doing? What do you see happening for yourself in the more global context right now?
Yeah. So I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. I've had waves of intense sadness. I think what breaks my heart the most and brings me to tears is thinking about people dying who are separated from their family, and families being separated from loved ones who are dying. I don't know why. I mean, there's if you think about it, there's so much suffering in the world already. But this pandemic has really exposed a lot of vulnerabilities and really brought out a lot of issues of the lack of a social safety net in our country, and a lot of the products of inequality, and I think it's exposed really sort of a spiritually distressed and diseased society where people are commodities. And corporations are people, and where we have a government that is sort of has a paradigm of sort of each person for themselves, and sort of an individualistic, ego-centered approach towards living. It's me, rather than we. And I think this is an opportunity to move from me to we. So really, like any crisis, what I'm seeing is people moving either back into fear, retreating in fear, or maybe moving forward in love. And we're at a branching point where, as a country and as individuals, we can either regress back to a lower level of functioning and psychosocial functioning and development, or we can progress. This is both a dangerous time, but also an opportunity of great growth possibly. And if we embrace this the right way, I think that the coronavirus can really be an opportunity for a correction, maybe an individual correction in our lives, but also perhaps a national correction as well. So it's an interesting time. And I think that it's good that we're talking about it. This is really a time to really have an opportunity to take a time out from life. And in a way, the forced stay at home is a real opportunity for stopping and taking what I might call a sacred pause from life and take a time out. One of the things that I teach and practice myself is I think everybody should begin their day in silence, solitude, and stillness before we get into the cult of doing and doing of our lives. And this virus opportunity really gives us a chance to take a step back and center in ourselves and really get into a practice of stillness, which can be so revitalizing for us personally, but also as a nation.
And I love that idea in my functioning self, you know, the part of me that can appreciate this is an opportunity to do some reflective work. But I guess before I can get to that place, I'm thinking of all of my friends and listeners and colleagues who, when things get quiet, that stillness becomes this large monkey mind of panic and then falling back into old habits of addiction and abuse. And so I think before you can even appreciate the stillness, there has to be a way of maintaining your sobriety, right?
Yes, absolutely. And the way that we do that, obviously, is with the support and reassurance of people who love us. And really, I think we kind of, there's a polarity here. There's a polarity between stillness and action. And we have to live in that. It's important that we are able to manage our fear and not get lost in our fear. And stillness is just one way of grounding us in what some people might call non-dual being. But we need to live that polarity of the dual and the non-dual at the same time. So it's really important that we go out and really take very, very good care of ourselves and soothe ourselves and really focus on loving other people. Right now is the time to really reach out and proactively get out and do two things: give help, but also ask for help. And especially people who are in recovery, or really anybody who suffered from any kind of love wounding or trauma or abuse, giving help and asking for help, either one of those can be very, very difficult. So this is a time when that is just very, very important. It's always important to do that, to give help and ask for help. But now is the time to really do that, to manage our fear.
And how does someone do that? I mean, there's two things that I'm thinking. You know, if I were someone in recovery, and I don't have experience with that, but I have friends that are new in their recovery, and what are the tools for that? If you can't be social and you can't connect, you can't get that support that has kind of been crucial to staying clean. And for people who have not entered into any sort of rehab or worked in a sobriety and they feel the escalation of use and abuse building, how do you manage that? How do you even get a step towards that?
Yeah. So, one of the things that I'm recommending for my patients right now who are new to recovery or who don't have established local Zoom meetings with their 12-step community or their recovery community, there's one website that I particularly like. It's called intherooms.com, intherooms.com. It's a global recovery network where they have online meetings, and that's a source to get recovery support right now. And I know that all the churches are now going online. It's been extraordinary. my Unitarian church is now online, and the Buddhist White Heron Sangha is online. And it's so I think just it's amazing that now we can harness this technology as a way of connecting. It's not the same as being in person with people. It isn't, but it's still, it is a form of being able to connect that we need to start using.
Is this a time that people should be thinking about recovery or reduction of habits?
Absolutely. This is a time, look, whenever we're in pain, we have a choice. We can either numb the pain with pleasure and distraction and avoid the pain, or we can heal the pain by going into the center of the pain with love. And really that's the fundamental existential choice right now we have, both individually, but also as a society. And really what a better time now to engage in a practice of love than in a time when we're feeling in pain and threatened and really having hardship like we are right now.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Dr. Michael McGee, psychiatrist, author, all-around supportive human being. and one of the things that I enjoy about Dr. McGee is this idea of looking at recovery from this viewpoint of love or a lack of or a desire for love in our lives. And I want to continue talking about that. And also the struggle of the increase in alcohol abuse and streaming and gaming. I mean, as addiction comes in a lot of forms, I think we tend to look or talk about addiction just when it comes to drug and alcohol abuse or opioid abuse, but there's a lot of addictive behaviors, as you said, you know, kind of numbing to the pain. And we invite you to be part of our conversation, 805-549 8855. Give us a call. You can ask a question to Claire and Marisa. They'll pass it along to us. If you're feeling bold, you can join us in our Zoom meeting. And they have the Zoom ID number for you. If you call in at 805-549-8855, we'll practice our own form of virtual sobriety support here during the show. I'm not really sure where to go with this, Dr. McGee, because there's a part of me that's like, yes, here's where I am with this. I don't want to rush back to opening the doors. And I talked about it last Tuesday on the show, that I feel like this is such an opportunity to sit in the dissonance or the discomfort of what life is right now. And to be able to, if we can sit in the muck and allow it to kind of wash over us, if we're having economic troubles or personal troubles or work troubles, you know, to sit in it and have enough discomfort that you can find a new direction. Because I keep thinking of Dr. Murray Bowen and his comment that nothing ever changes until the pain of staying the same becomes greater than the pain of change. And we are really adept at sitting in pain for a really long time. Horrific pain, because the idea that we would change that comfortable pain or that recognizable pain and go in a direction that we don't know where it's going to take us is more overwhelming. And yeah. I keep thinking that we are already in the pain is so great that we have to change. But I see people wanting to swim back to the familiar, as you said, to regress. They're trying to swim back to, I want the economy open. I want to get back to my job. I want my life the way it was. But that's saying, but do I really want that?
Right. Right. Yes. We, you know, when we talk about addiction, there are more subtle forms of addiction that we all suffer from. And one of them that we have as a society and individually is addiction to our current way of living. And it really is an addiction. If you define addiction as sort of compulsive, out of control, good now, bad later behavior, our American way of life is definitely an addiction. It is compulsive. It is out of control, and it is good now, maybe for some of us, but it is bad later for us as a country. And this COVID virus has really, really exposed that. And so in a way, we can think of this virus as kind of like an intervention almost like it for somebody who's suffering from an addiction where you have an intervention. It's like, wait, stop, look at what's going on here. Look at the pollution. Look at the hatred. Look at the unregulated capitalism. Look at the increase in the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. Look at the spiritual alienation. Look at the compulsive do. Look at the lack of connection. Look at the lack of love. Look at the self-hatred and the hatred we throw at each other. Can we look at all of this, and can we see really our addiction to this way of living that is causing so much harm for each other and for our society and for the world? Do you know that pollution rates have apparently gone down, I think I read, by like 25%? We are being so hard on this home, and the COVID virus really makes us wake up and see, wow, we are fundamentally vulnerable. All of us are vulnerable. And there are global forces much greater than we, that we are completely, utterly dependent upon. And we're all in this together, rich, poor, you know, whatever your stripe in society, we are all fundamentally equal and the same. And can we wake up and see that? And can we wake up for the need to live for the me and the we in a balanced way? That is the correction. That is the recovery from this addiction, is living for me and for we in a balanced way. Ultimately, living for the we that includes the me. That is the ultimate of love, is living for the we that includes the me. And so we really have this opportunity to do that and really see the we as the entire world. In some ways, some people are saying that one of the potential bad outcomes is that we might emerge from this crisis too early and not be able to really deeply stop and take a look together collectively at what is going on. And can we envision a new normal? Not go back to normal. We don't want to go back to normal. But can we envision a new normal that we can now embrace, a new way of being with each other, based on what we've learned from this virus?
But then, of course, I'm going to devil's advocate you.
Please.
Because, you know, if I run a shop, a beauty shop, I think of, you know, my friend Lorella who does my hair. And, you know, if I'm not doing hair, I'm not getting paid. And so this all sounds fine and good, but I need to have money, or I lose my house, or I lose my job. And I think that's what I struggle with, because I like the philosophical ideal of Murray Bowen's, you know, we have to swim from one shore to another shore, and it's the murkiness of the sea that throws us off. But if we're all in the sea and you don't know if there's land ahead of you, I would swim back to shore, I think, if all I knew was, you know, I need to pay my rent to get my house. Like, are we just having too much of a privileged fantasy conversation about what could be, when in reality, no one sees any other shore, and only a few privileged people have the luxury of swimming to a new way of being, and everyone else has to go back to staying afloat? I guess that's where I struggle, because I want to philosophically say this is our moment, but then the clinician in me is saying, well, what about someone who is newly sober or struggling with opioid addiction or is struggling with their kids at home and is worried they're going to hurt them? Like, what do we offer to them? Because we're that helping profession. We're those people.
Yeah. 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 No, your point is well taken. Well taken. And we don't want to be sort of lofty and idealistic about this. But from a spiritual point of view, that's just one way of looking at it. There's sort of a polarity here. I think life is full of polarities and paradoxes. I don't know if you feel that way, but I think there's incredible polarities here. And one of them is that there is very real suffering, and we need to do what we can to help each other out during this time of suffering. Very, very important. And there's a governmental role, and then there's a local community role, and then there's a way to help each other as family. I know that our family is very active in helping our other family members and friends who are without work right now. And I think this is an opportunity we need. I mean, nobody wishes for this to go on and for there to be more suffering unnecessarily. That is cruel and unrealistic. And we need to do what we can. But But as we cope with this, if we can sort of see the reality of the life that we've created and the vulnerabilities that hit and that have been exposed by this virus, and if we can envision a new way of being with each other in the world, a way of love, I think that would be all the better for us.
My guest is Dr. Michael McGee. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And our number, if you'd like to participate, share your thoughts, or ask a question, is 805-549-8855. And, you know, I keep going back and forth between wanting to be my pragmatic clinician self and say, okay, so let's talk about the day-to-day. You know, I felt all along that one of the things that needs to happen during this time is that people have to find a routine of some sort, even if you're not getting up and going to work, but mm-hmm. that you have a way that you get through each day, because that kind of slogging one foot in front of the other, one day at a time kind of thing is important, as I understand, in recovery. And again, that's not my specialty. I'm leaning on you in this, but I'm thinking that before we can feel gracious in our sharing of love for each other and being there for each other, we have to, you know, have the me cared for, and the most basic way to do that is to have some sort of routine. I mean, that's my first thought, is I keep saying, don't let yourself just stay in the pajamas all day. Don't just let the kids look at the screen. Try to create a normal that's different than the old normal, but that is normal for now. That's one thought I had, but what do you think?
So I think basically we always needed a routine, and we always will need a routine. And the question is, what is that routine? And I would propose to you that for all of us, the calling of life is to practice a routine of love. Mm-hmm. And that routine involves one way of separating this or thinking about it is three routines, three love routines. And one routine of love is to love yourself, radically and unconditionally, and take very good care of yourself as if you were your own ideal parent. That's one love routine. And so you get up and you eat good nutrition and you engage in, for me, an hour of stillness every morning. And then exercise. I exercise 6 days a week and eat healthy. And so that's one. And then the second love routine is to allow yourself to be loved by others. Open yourself to the love of other people. Really appreciate and receive the love of others, and also ask for the love of others. So many people have difficulty, especially with addiction, asking for help, picking up the phone. The phone can feel like it weighs 2 tons. It's just too heavy to pick up. But this is a second love routine that we all need to engage in, is asking for and receiving and opening to the love of other people. And then the third love routine is to really, is to love other people. So it's loving ourselves, receiving the love of others, and loving other people. Is that not really the essence of any person's ideal life routine? And don't we have a sort of a calling to devote ourselves to the practice of love in whatever we're doing, whatever circumstance we're in, virus or not? This is really our practice. And what a great opportunity we have now with this virus, when we're sheltering at home, to really focus maybe on the self-love part of this. And because I think we get caught up into sort of egoic doing, striving, achieving from a place of insufficiency, inadequacy, deficiency, that sort of we get caught up in a compulsive, addictive way. And really, now that we're have this sort of shelter in place, what a great opportunity to maybe take a step out of that compulsive, egoic way of being and really instead devote ourselves to the practice of love, as I described.
All right. So which one's the hardest? Because I can tell you where I would struggle with those three practices.
Where is that? What's hardest for you?
So the loving of others, I can do. That just flows out. And I think I'm pretty good at loving myself. I feel like I handle the self-care piece, and you know, I have enough reserves that I think I'm doing okay. But the accepting love of others and feeling that come in, all of a sudden you lost me there. I go, ooh, I am not 3 for 3 with the love practice. So which one is most challenging for people? And how do you develop that if it's not in your routine right now?
Yeah, I think allowing the love of others in is really an act of self-love, really. It's one aspect of self-love. And, you know, with so many people, they've suffered so much trauma, so much neglect and trauma and wounded. We have all been wounded, right? And we have all wounded. So we're sort of cut in this dilemma where we need so much to love and be loved. That is our higher purpose. That is what's most fulfilling in life. And yet we are damaged because of our woundedness. We are caught in fear. We're afraid of rejection. We're afraid of judgment. Which is really an act of violence to judge either ourselves or other people. So we live in a world of violence, love and violence. And the thing is, when you really look deeply at that, and I invite if you care to share on this, but I think on a subtle unconscious level, when you look at it, the violence starts towards ourselves. With our own judgment of ourselves. And when you really see whether we radically and unconditionally, reverently love ourselves unconditionally with all our faults and flaws and mistakes, and we feel our sacredness, when we really develop that through our contemplative practices, when we do that, then it's so much easier to let in the love of other people. Because there's less fear. If somebody rejects you or judges you or is hurtful to you, you realize that that has nothing to do with your sacredness. And it makes it easier to be more open-hearted in receiving of the love of others. I don't know if that resonates for you or not.
My brain goes in a lot of different directions because you know, there's the clinician in me that's hearing it as another clinician, like, well, how would a client hear this? And there's my own hearing of it. So the first thought was, if I'm someone hearing this and it starts to feel overwhelming, this idea of radical self-love, I hear my 1960s childhood of, you know, don't think so highly of yourself. You're self-absorbed, like that tape starts to play that kind of, it's not about you. And then for a client coming in, I can hear them, you know, when I say that radical self-love, put yourself first, their first thought is, I think I just want to leave now and start running away from you because it feels overwhelming to even address that. So I think I'll have extra wine tonight.
But isn't it true though that really to receive the love of others, we have to feel that we're lovable, and to feel that we're lovable really starts with that feeling of reverence for ourselves.
But I don't know if that's our. I'm sorry. I was gonna say, but I don't know if that's our cultural story because, you know, I know that I'm not alone in that experience. I think that's kind of there's this cultural story that's a duality. One is we over. Pump our kids up with, you know, self-esteem building ideas that has no substance to it, right? It just is a lot of hot air. And then on the other hand, we say, you're not deserving. You have to earn people's respect. You have to earn joy. You know, we have a very Puritan work ethic ideal in this country. And so I don't know where that in between lies, because if I'm thinking about people I know or people I've worked with, it's one of two. They either have this incredibly inflated sense of self that's not really grounded in anything real, or they have such self-criticism because that is that cultural story that you're not just lovable because you exist. You have to earn that by doing something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, again, I think we're talking about paradox and so much of this is paradox and polarity. I think one of the greatest experiences that I had in terms of a spiritual awakening experience that really helped me with my own self-hatred was it was actually last August. I was up in the Sierras and I was reading Thomas Merton and journaling on Thomas Merton and then meditating and reading and journaling and meditating. And I had one of several awakening experiences where I had this profound experience of this life force sort of flowing through me and through the trees and the birds and the fish in the water. And I had this profound realization of the obvious that had always been before my eyes, but I'd never seen, is that this force is about life and not about me. It's not about me. It's only about me to the degree that I'm part of this life force. And it was, and that I've been given this gift of life, and that I'm just a part of this vast dynamic process of living that's going on this planet that I'm just a tiny little part of. And I had a profound experience of just profound gratitude and a sense of, you know, really I've been given this gift, and it's really about loving and serving. But then in that sense of insignificance, that not being about me, I felt my own sacredness. I know it's a paradox, but in my insignificance, I felt my sacredness, because I'm just part of something sacred that is much, much bigger than little, tiny little me. So I don't know if that gives you a sense of it, but I think that if you have that sense of your sacredness, it's much more easier to then to forget yourself and receive the love of others openly, open-heartedly, and then devote yourself to, out of gratitude and humility, to serving other people.
You're listening to my guest, Dr. Michael McGee. Wise words. Dr. McGee is a psychiatrist, author of The Joy of Recovery, and 101 ways to know if you are
101 things to know if you're addicted to painkillers. It's a book about recovery from opioid addiction, basically.
Thank you. And how are your books available, Dr. McGee?
On Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, yeah.
The easy ways to find them.
Yeah.
Probably good reading for this time when we're talking about love and acceptance and recovery. Now, you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you are invited to be a part of our show. So a little different this week. We're using a different number, 805-549-8855. If you have a question or comment, call in, and Marisa will pass the question along to Carol, and we'll get your questions on the air or an opportunity to talk to Dr. McGee. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue the conversation. Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
The moment I wake up, before I pull on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. And while I'm combing my hair now, and wondering what dress to wear now, I say a little prayer for you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And my guest is Dr. Michael McGee. Thank you for tuning in today, for hanging in there with us. And again, if you have a comment or question you'd like to share, our number is 805-549-8855. And it is my goal, Dr. McGee, before I get back into the studio live, that someone is going to Zoom in and join us on one of my shows in the coming weeks, because I would love to see someone's face. Know that they're out there. And so if you would want to Zoom in, you can call 805-549-8855 and get our Zoom ID number. So we're talking about kind of sobriety, recovery in this time of COVID and uncertainty. And you had sent me an article when we started talking about this week about the increase in alcohol sales up by 55%, the increase in marijuana sales, the increase in porn consumption, more food being consumed, less exercise. And we had talked about that this is indicative of our culture, which doubles down on bad habits when things get stressful, instead of moving towards more self-care when things get stressful. So I'd like to touch on both of those things. One, about the doubling down on those bad habits. And, you know, is a clinician who works in the field of recovery, is part of you saying, well, you know, we'll just do the best we can and we'll think about it when we're out of the crisis? Or do you think this is an appropriate time to be trying to address, you know, our alcohol consumption or weed consumption or porn consumption? Where do you, how do we do this?
Yeah.
How do we help?
Well, it's interesting. My thinking has kind of changed about habits. I think of them as either effective or ineffective. And I think that numbing pain with pleasure is actually, it's an act of love in the sense that the intention behind it is to feel good and not feel bad. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that we all universally share as living beings, is we want to feel good and not feel bad. So addiction is kind of an unskillful form of love. In other words, the intent behind it is good, to want to feel good. It's just that the consequences are harmful. And so it's not loving, because really the definition of love is something which is enhances our well-being and not harms us. So now is the time. Now is always the time to stop harming yourself. Now is always a good time to stop harming yourself. So if you are harming yourself, and if you're addicting, by definition, when you harm yourself, you're harming others. We need to realize we're all interconnected. And when you harm yourself, you're harming others. You're harming all of life when you harm yourself. And so it's just to wake up and see that there's a better way. There's a better way to manage pain. There is a better way. And really to engage in managing that pain in a better way is what we have the opportunity, whether we're in the COVID virus or not, we can manage that pain in a better way right now.
Is there, because you, when you said, you know, addiction is kind of a odd way of trying to self-soothe, because if, you know, you're spending a lot of time watching porn, there is that feel good release that comes along with that, but in the long term there's all the unintended consequences or side effects of utilizing that. And so my understanding of healing is that you have to replace one form of care or self-love with something else. And so if someone feels like, you know, I'm drinking too much wine or I'm spending too much time in Pornhub, what is the replacement? Because I think it would be hard to say, now just sit in stillness. Because, you know, I would imagine most people say, no, I'd rather pour more wine than sit in stillness. So how do you replace, or is that the recovery that you replace one attempt at self-soothing with something else?
So again, the solution is love. And as I mentioned, there's three types of love. There's loving yourself, there's allowing others to love you, and then there's loving others. And that really is the solution. And so when you have these kind of, when you're in addiction, you by definition sort of lost your free will. You're compulsive and out of control. And by definition, you need to empower yourself by asking for help from something greater than yourself, or doing things to structure your environment in ways that sort of soothe you and reduce the capability to addict. I have a patient I was just on the phone with just before we met, who has a pornography addiction, and his phone is locked down now where he can't download applications onto his phone. And he's recruited the help of other people. A gambling addiction is way up on some of these sites. Twix and Mixer and Caffeine and Discord are some live streaming gaming platforms. But I have one patient with addiction who basically, assigned over his bank account to his parents, so he doesn't have the money to gamble anymore. So there's all these cognitive behavioral strategic things that you can do right now. And those are all acts of love for yourself. But I think reaching out and asking for the support and help of other people is really important. I have another patient I was just on the phone with, in session with before we met, who has a kratom addiction. And He is now engaging in a concentrated breath meditation technique every time he gets a craving. And for him, that works. Again, there's about 20 or 40 different ways of managing cravings. But in general, the rule that I tell people is never crave alone. Never crave alone. Never crave alone. And what you want to do is you want to recruit your frontal lobes through loving connection to somebody to talk about the good things that will happen if you don't addict, the bad things that will happen if you do addict, what's triggering the craving, and then what you can do to soothe and distract yourself. Those are the four parts of talking out of craving. And that's something that people can do right now. They can start exercising that practice. Now, it's a skill, and it takes practice. So it's like anything else. It takes a few repetitions to really get good at it. But that's something that people can do right now. I do think that there's a need to combine. Let me just talk a little bit about stillness. And what I want to say about stillness is that when you get really, really still, what happens is awareness gets disentangled from the content of awareness. And that could be thoughts, feelings, urges, senses, sights, sounds, memories. And when you get very, very still, you realize you are the awareness of your experience. And that awareness is pure, and it's empty, and it's infinite. It has no center, no bound. And what comes up, what's most remarkable about the practice of stillness, when the mind quiets, is you realize that what comes out with that is a feeling of love, of reverence, an emotion, an attitude of reverence and wholeness. And what it does is it creates a crucible. Awareness, the practice of still awareness, creates this crucible of loving awareness that then holds all the pain. It holds the negativity. It disentangles you from experience in a way that you can hold your experience without being caught up in it. So the trick is to ultimately, through practice, to be able to be still and then be still while still moving. That is the ultimate goal. That is everything in the practice. And so it's that stillness and love combination that is so, so important, because when you get off up out of your chair, you want to carry that sense of stillness, but then you want to, again, engage in those three practices of the love that we talked about. And if you do those, I guarantee you, you will recover. Absolutely.
And so in this moment of recovery and recovery from COVID, you know, there's kind of the multiple things going on. We have our personal experiences of what are going on, our cultural experiences of what is happening and trying to recover, and then the global, and you know, tomorrow is Earth Day. It's the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, and that hasn't been lost on me at all. Some of the ironies of, you know, what we're experiencing and what the Earth is experiencing and how tomorrow's going to land. And I don't know how many people even think about where we were 50 years ago and how we even started talking about Earth Day and the interconnectedness that you talked about and that loving of others, but also loving of the planet and loving of the environment. And there's a lot of capacity to give of ourselves and to spread out that love, not just because I can imagine some people saying, well, there's no one I love, or I have alienated myself from others. But then there is that kind of global love you can feel for just being in existence on this planet, as the planet kind of fights to shake off whatever it is that's ailing it and heal. Carol, I see you waving to me, so I think we have a question.
We do. Jane called in from San Luis Obispo in response to Dr. McGee's comments on having a sacred experience. And she says that it's difficult to verbalize what has happened to other people. And she says it is possible to have your own sacred experience if you are open to the possibilities.
And I missed you at the very beginning, Carol. Who called?
Jane from San Luis Obispo.
Thank you, Jane. So I'm assuming Jane's had this experience that you talk about, Dr. McGee.
Yes, many people have had awakening experiences. The thing is, you can't ego awakening. But if you look at the literature, for example, on awakening and recovery, I just wrote a review paper on this last year. People who have had an awakening experience have about a threefold higher rate of recovery than people who have not. And Bill Wilson, for example, who had intractable alcoholism, had actually a drug-induced awakening experience in a New York hospital and never drank again after that. Awakening is a very, very, very important part of recovery and of life for many, many people. And it's not a religious thing. It's more of an existential awareness kind of thing. But the thing is, you can't ego an awakening, but what you can do is cultivate the conditions for an awakening experience to occur. And for most of us, an awakening, and it might, although I've had several sort of a sudden awakening experiences, which were really quite profound, I'd say that overall, there's been an overall arc of a sort of a gradual awakening. And I'm far from fully awakened, that's for sure. But it's a gradual process that we can cultivate, again, through, I think, these two things, through a daily consistent practice of stillness, combined with a daily consistent practice of love. And if you do that, you will cultivate an awakening over time.
Is it somewhat, and not to, I don't want to be crass, but I don't know how else to describe it, but is it somewhat like once you've experienced an orgasm, you know that feeling, so you know how to find your way back to it?
Yes, it's like a reminder. You know what it is? In my book, Do I Recovery, I talk about the 12 touchstones of recovery, the 12 core principles of recovery. But in a way, awakening is like, an awakening experience is like a touchstone. Like, oh, yes, this is the truth. And this truth is obscured and clouded by self-clinging and self-centered thinking, which dies down to some degree in a stillness practice. And really, that's the second addiction. We have our social addiction to our lifestyle, but each one of us also has an addiction to ego, an addiction to self-clinging, an addiction to self-centered thinking, an addiction to the illusion of separateness from each other. And really, ultimately, recovery is a recovery from that addiction.
And what a time it is, you know, to talk about this illusion of being independent, because I'm in my home with all of my family and I'm enjoying it. I don't know how the rest of them, you know, everyone seems to be, but we're all learning a lot about each other in ways that I don't think we would have if we hadn't been in, had this opportunity. I see it as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about the stillness piece, that really resonates. You know, if we took nothing away from this whole opportunity, there's certain things we can't control right now. We can't control where the virus is going to go. We can't control the economic recovery. We can't, in some ways, control the devastation of our own personal finances or losing everything we have. We can't control a lot of that. And I think in our American way, we feel like every day if we don't get up and try to do something, we're failing. But there's nothing we can do in this moment. So in this moment, all we can do is be still. Am I on the right track?
Stillness, and we can also love. We can be still and we can love. You know, one of the things I want to express that you don't know it until you've experienced it. And a lot of people just, they're so caught up in compulsive doing that they haven't experienced stillness. So you have to try it and experience it for yourself. But what you notice is when you create that crucible of loving awareness that stillness is, that calms our fear. When you get really, really still, you connect with the non-dual, the fact that we are just, there's just this one reality, this one ground of being that we are all manifestations of. That's profoundly calming. It's profoundly calming. And it creates this polarity where you can be afraid and be not afraid at the same time. There's this crucible of non-fear, of just all is well. That's part of it, the awakening, is all is well and all will be well. We're all going to die. We're all going to suffer and all is well. It's sort of a peace that passeth all understanding. And that's what this stillness practice gives you.
I remember the first time I had an experience in stillness, and I was by myself. I was staying by myself for about 6 weeks, is I think the longest I'd ever been alone in my entire life. And about midway through, I was riding my bike and I had this incredible sense of peace and thought, wow, if this is what life is supposed to feel like, I like this. <You know? laughs> that it was, I enjoyed my own, I was like happy in my own being of just thoughts, and I had no goals or actions or anything I was trying to accomplish. I was just pedaling my bike. And it was such a fleeting moment, but so strong that, again, I find myself, I know where it is. And so now I can find it. But before I had that experience, I had no idea what anyone was talking about.
That's like a touchstone for you, a reminder of what's possible.
So I think that's why I get on my bike and pedal often, because that's where I kind of find that groove. Dr. McGee, I know you have another patient to see. So I thank you so much for spending an hour with me and sharing your calming voice and your thoughts. If you would like to get in touch with Dr. McGee, I don't know if you're taking patients right now, but are you still?
I have a few openings a few weeks out. People can reach me at my email. If people have questions or comments, is mdm@wellmind.com. And I'm happy to extend myself to be there for anybody who's struggling right now in any way that I can.
Thank you. mdm@wellmind.com. And yeah. Dr. McGee's book, The Joy of Recovery, is available on Amazon and 100, say it again for me.
101 Things to Know If You're Addicted to Painkillers.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. McGee, and enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for sharing your love with me and to all of my listeners.
Okay. Love you. Take care.
Love you. This has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. As always, I appreciate you for being part of our community and part of our conversations every week. You can find me on Facebook or Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And if you want some company, you can podcast my show. Visit wherever you get your podcasts. I look for a conversation with a reluctant therapist and subscribe. The shows will be there, or listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. If you have anything you'd like to share, anything you'd like to talk about over the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, I'm going to be here. So send your comments or requests for shows to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio.
Rents are high. What can a working girl do but struggle through enough?